First thing I'd like to take care of is House Bill 906. As you see, we have a new substitute here that specifically designates where these funds are going to go. And whether you're in favor of the bill or not, I think this is about as direct and to the point as we can get. Is anyone opposed to moving the bill out of committee?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make an amendment on line 14. After the word Shishmaref, add the sentence, and no other villages in the state of Alaska may be added to this bill. Just for the record, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that could be just as easily amended as putting one in, so.
What they got there, it is a pilot project, so.
If you made no shift in the Shishmaref, you're Westman Dixon.
Oral, do you have a question?
Let's move that.
I expected to get changed in finance, and people in finance are betting for every other town around the state of Alaska.
Do you have a question, Mrs. Rich?
Yeah, I still have hesitation about including Shishmaref if, as the testimony told us yesterday, there aren't any people that are going to be eligible to receive the student.
Yes.
I call Shishmaref, I've got nine seniors there, in the age of 16, 65, and nine over 65.
But none of them are receiving the welfare benefits.
They probably know that they got some benefits. They could grab a hold of it. That's probably why they haven't received them.
Eric?
Do they need homes, or are they taken care of now? I mean,
this apparently must be taken care of by other people by their time.
I think Mr. Lee back here had an appropriate comment.
Checking with Health and Social Services, the report that we had with the original data on was issued in October. They indicate that it's highly out of date at this time. And the likelihood of people on there is probably pretty good. Again, there would be eligible for people because of the number of people over 65 would be eligible people in that area. I do know that. Whether they're receiving direct assistance or not, Health and Social Services felt that there was a likelihood that they probably are, but they couldn't tell us exactly how many at this point. That's where we are.
Anything else?
I'm one of them.
Well, the next one up is Senate Bill 529. Palmer, did you expect to testify on this, or were you going to have Mr. Dozier?
I'll have Mr. Dozier. There's also some guests from Palmer.
Right.
I don't know if the invitation of Mr. Olson.
Well, we'll get a short presentation.
Your
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Dozier with the Department of State Assessor, Department of Community and Regional Affairs. The bill that we have before us, I believe, is Senate Bill Number 529, amended. The Section 1 of the bill, the purpose of this is, brought to our attention that there is a problem under the Senior Citizens Property Tax Exemption Program and in relation to the optional exemption under 2953025A, the $10,000 residential property exemption, that it is possible, and it was attempted and apparently is in operation, whereas a borough would require an owner of residential property to file application with the borough to receive the $10,000 exemption on his residence, which would exempt him from paying a local levy on the $10,000 portion of the property. He would pay on the value above $10,000. The problem arises then if the applicant, who happens to be a senior citizen, properly files application with the borough, and the borough then turns in the application to the state for reimbursement of the entire amount of the exemption for that property. And the applicant failed to file properly for the $10,000 exemption, for the local exemption, the borough then, or the city, could in effect collect for the applicant, or collect not only from the applicant on that the $10,000 value, but also collect from the state. This was drafted by Mr. Bradley, our attorney, as a close that loophole so that the municipality would not be able to collect twice for that $10,000 optional residential exemption if the applicant failed to properly file with the borough for that, but filed properly for under the Senior Citizens Property Tax Exemption. The Section 2 of the bill is merely covers that, it's covers this so that it is specified in proper perspective and other measures. Before we go on, Mr. Chairman, into the farm and agriculture part of the bill, is there any questions you have the committee might have on that first section of the bill relating to this exemption of senior citizens?
I think I understand it. I think you made it pretty clear. It's I don't have any questions on the first part. I don't know if anyone else does.
The section 3 of the bill was drafted originally, before it was amended by the Senate, as to put a lien on the property for in the amount on farm and agricultural land, a lien in the amount of the state reimbursement on that property, so that the state could retrieve its money for the deferred taxes that it has paid over the preceding 7 years, for the state has paid for the applicant on the difference between the farm use value and the full and true value. The Senate deleted that from the present bill that's before you, primarily with the idea that there may be some other method of of collecting this money, assuring the state that the money will be collected. However, I'm not aware of it. Mr. Bradley put this in also. As he said, the present bill is written in such a way that there is no way that the municipality cannot put a normal lien against the property because they have their money, and therefore there is no reason for them to put a lien on the property for the deferred taxes. The state is the only one that would have any reason to put it on to retrieve their money. If the state does not want, if they want to make it just a plain grant program, fine. Then this, apparently that's the intent, because they have deleted that from this bill. So we'll, looking at the bill in its present form, they've only made a couple of minor changes in it relating to they changed the word from other farm, should the farm use land be sold, leased, or otherwise disposed of for other than farm use purposes. They've just changed the wording that says for uses incompatible with farm use, and used that, and they have increased from 5% interest the penalty, or I should say the payback, from 5% to 8%.
Mr. Dosher, how would you describe the effect, as you see it, of that first change from other than farm use to uses incompatible with farm use? What do you think would be the effect of that change?
I really don't know what the difference would be. A use that incompatible with farm use, perhaps a little bit later, Mrs. Berry is here from the Matanuska Susitna Borough. She's the assessor there. Most of the 79 applicants, we had 79 applicants in this program last year, and most of those, 50-some of them, are from the Matanuska Susitna Borough, and she might be able to have an explanation of that.
Well, have you ever tried to, has anyone ever defaulted on this? Has anyone ever come into the situation where the money was actually due to the state?
Have it you has ever occurred tried to, this year, and we're coming up to this problem. This year is the first year, I should say, this year, 1975 was the first year that the state reimbursed under this program. Prior to that, it was a borough-operated function that was required by law. The amendment to the bill, and the bill was changed so that the state would reimburse starting last year for this difference. There is a question as to whether or not there is a problem relating to income. It says that you must, the applicant must have 10% of his gross income from the farm use activity.
Just for the record now, last year was the first year the state was started to reimburse?
Yes, and it hasn't been, we're just now starting to reimburse the municipalities.
Well, that must have been passed in 74 then, is that?
Yes.
Right? And up until that time, I suppose the...
And it came effective on the assessments for January the 1975 tax year, which were reimbursed in the 76 fiscal budget.
I see. So there already has been a reimbursement then?
To one municipality we've made a reimbursement, and we haven't reimbursed. There is a problem. We've had a problem with checking of income. Several of the applicants who made... and we have what we call they have an option on our administrative code regulations where the applicant can either show the assessor proof by showing the assessor a copy of his income tax return that he made 10% of his income, or that they can sign a waiver if they do not want the local assessor to look at it. They can sign a waiver and allow the department to have the Department of Revenue check their income tax return to see if they did make 10%. Now, in some cases, we have not found on file the income tax records. They were not be able to find them. And in some cases, the income didn't indicate on their return that they had, in fact, made 10%. And we have, depending on probably what the legislature does this year as to whether or not we will go ahead and give it to them or really make an issue out of it.
Well, at the present time, it sounds like, you know, it says the payment by the owner shall be made to the state. So I suppose under that language, your alternative is what, to send them a bill, right? And if they don't pay it, then you take them to court? Is that the procedure that you'd have to use right now?
Well, there's no provision, no lien provision, so they could sell the property. It would be under new owner. How in the world, if Mr. Bradley was very emphatic about it. He felt the bill was written quite cleverly, but there was no way that he could see where the state could receive that money.
He didn't see how the state could receive it?
Could retrieve it.
Well,
that's what you're talking about?
Right. Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, unless you ran into a problem where the person was going to sell the property, it looks like you'd, it says right here, they shall pay the state to the extent of its reimbursement if the land goes to other than farm use. And at that point, you send them a bill saying, hey, you owe us this much money. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it seems like the way you'd do it.
And if he refused, what would be the alternative?
Well, he's according to the law, he owes it to you, so, you know, the normal legal procedures, I would assume, would be in order.
Very
at that
good.
Time.
We haven't tried it yet. I don't know. That was Mr. Bradley's statement, and I'm seeing.
Well, perhaps we could hear from Mrs. Berry now.
Yes, surely I'd be glad to.
Unless, did you have something else?
No, that's all.
How much money was involved in
this year? Farm. Just a minute, I have it here. There's only less than I think there'll be something in the vicinity of $100,000.
For the record, I'm Elizabeth Berry, and I'm the borough assessor for the Matanuska Susitna Borough in Palmer. The subject that you were just discussing is one of our main administrative problems. Now, I have brought with me three amendments to the existing legislation that we're going to suggest, and attached to the first sheet are some of the administrative problems that we've run into in administering this section of the existing legislation that we were just discussing. I have brought copies with me so that you can see what we're suggesting while we discuss it. And perhaps after you read the first suggestion, then we can discuss what our particular problems are. I'm sorry.
For one, you got another one?
Yes, I have some back here. Thank you.
Mrs. Berry,
yes.
Just to get this straight here, You start out saying Section 3A to be deleted, so you deleted the whole thing, all of Section 3A. Is that right? Is that what you...
Well, if you'll note that that says Senate Bill 529, and I understand that the Senate has now amended this bill to delete that section that we requested. And then if you'll go into the actual legislation, Section A under 2953-035B, what we're asking you to delete is the repayment of deferred taxes.
Well, I think it's all, Section 3 is 2953-035A in both bills.
Yes, the, as I understand it, Section 3A has already been deleted. Pardon me, it's not dedicated for purpose. That section of it where it says, should the farm use land be sold, leased, or otherwise disposed of for uses incompatible with farm use, or be converted to a use incompatible by the owner shall be liable to pay the amount equal to the additional tax in the current mill levy of, together with 8%. We're suggesting that that be deleted from the current bill, and that the portion that says the same thing without these changes in the existing legislation, we're suggesting that it be deleted for what is already a law. Now, it would depend entirely on the intent of this legislation that went into effect. If it was to encourage farmers to keep their land, if it's to retain farmlands, the deferment has a valid reason. But if it's to encourage farming, it doesn't necessarily accomplish its purpose, because first of all, if a farmer sells his property to someone who says they're going to farm it, we do not ask for payment of deferred taxes. But what happens if the new buyer decides he doesn't want to farm? There's a question of who is liable for the deferred taxes and how you're going to collect them. There is a question of determining which farmers have sold portions of their land for either farm or non-farm use. This is very difficult, administratively speaking, to determine. You have instances where perhaps for a year the farmer is incapacitated and he does not farm his land. Is he liable for the last 7 years deferred taxes because for 1 year he's unable to farm it? Or say a farmer dies and the wife is holding the land either without producing on it or with leasing it. Is she liable for the 7 years deferred taxes? At the moment, it's only those farmers who come to us and say, I have sold my farm to a subdivider. What do I owe you in deferred taxes? They're the only ones from which we are able to collect at this point in time, which means that the honest farmer is being penalized, and the man who's simply selling his land, no matter for what use, is at the moment untouched because of the administrative problems in determining why he has sold it. So that we're suggesting that it be made a straight grant program. On the year that you qualify for farm use, your taxes are, a portion of it is paid by the state without any question of deferment. I think we're going to run into even more problems when the state attempts to collect. Taxes ordinarily go with the land. But who is really going to be responsible for this deferred tax bill?
Well, the department has a suggestion, it seems like, and that's to, you know, to encumber the property with a lien. And at that point, there wouldn't be any question about who would have to pay the taxes. It would be a lien against the property.
Right. And however, now, I noticed particularly this bill is retroactive. many farmers will not take advantage of the farm use if it constitutes a lien against their property. We've run into this with senior citizens' sewer and water assessments, where the payment of taxes on a deferred basis creates a lien against the property, and we haven't had a single senior citizen take advantage of that deferment because they do not want liens against their property. And our farmers have indicated that they would be very, very displeased that they would not take advantage of this. I think it's going to create a lot of problems with our farmers. I'm not even sure in my own mind whether it's legal. Once we have received taxes, it would be the state that would have to bring suit.
Yeah, that's what they, I think that's what their intention is.
And then how they're going to determine which land is no longer in farm use is another question. You'd have to wait a full year to see if the new owner was going to farm it or not.
Farmer, it looks like you need it.
Go ahead. The first question that you posed, Ms. Berry, about if the owner does sell to a new farm owner, of course, under the present law, that is the difficulty, and that's one reason for the idea of the lien provision, is that the lien, of course, would transfer with to the new owner. And of course, at the time he buys the property, he would be aware that there is that lien, so that even after 1 year of application, if he should sell to a subdivider, that lien, of course, would then come into effect. And with regard to your second concern about the idea of incapacitated farmers, I think that's one where there ought to be some language change to permit that type of thing. In terms of the idea, I think the original intent of the legislation, of course, was a deferred tax payment. I think I know the answer even before I ask. It is a local tax that we're dealing with here. And is the borough saying that they would make a grant to that, or you're saying that the borough would allow the exemption as long as the state pays for the farm exemption?
We did allow the exemptions prior to the state paying it. It does create a large loss on our tax base. And we like the fact that the state is paying these taxes. We're only concerned with how the deferred tax is going to be paid. If we have to administer it, it's costly and it's difficult to do it equitably. If the state wants to assume the responsibility for determining which deferred taxes need to be collected, then it's your problem, not mine.
Well, they're going to have to either way, whether there's a lien on the property or not, if the state's the body that's going to be responsible for collecting these. Isn't that correct? And the only benefit that I can see to having a lien on the property would be that it would be a less cumbersome legal process. You'd still have to go and determine who did what with what property, who didn't farm, who didn't collect that much income. That burden is still behind you.
On the local government, and it's a very difficult one to determine.
Is it on the local government?
That is the way we have interpreted it in the past. If it's a state problem, then we don't have a problem.
Mrs. Rudd, I'm sorry.
I want to go back to the problems with determining who's eligible and who's not, if that's all right.
Fine.
On the instances you give, for instance, the instance when the farmer's incapacitated for a season, the way the law is worded now, it seems to me, no, wait a minute, should the farm be otherwise disposed of? Oh, yeah. A farmer who's incapacitated for a season but who does not dispose of or use his farm for non-farm purposes would still be eligible. Has your lawyer looked at it?
That was not the interpretation of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs.
That it has to be actively farmed?
Actively farmed, and that is in the...
Well, doesn't that relate, if I can interject, Bob, back to the criteria as to the 10%?
The definition of farm use land is to be farm use land, the owner or the lessee must be actively engaged in farming the land and derive at least 10% of his yearly gross income from the farm use land. That is in Section C of the original bill.
And that would pose a problem, of course, if a person were sick for a year, or even 2 years, or 3 years, whatever.
Right.
That unless they can show the income requirement, they would, of course, be penalized under the existing statute. And I think there we would say that perhaps there could and should be some allowance for that unusual circumstance of an illness or other incapacity.
At the present time, there's an allowance for, I think, 1 year's grace period, isn't there? Act of God, crop failure, something like
that. That's right. You may have other solutions. All I want you to see are the problems that we have with this.
Thank you, sir. Al, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to maybe clarify. Maybe it's been answered. But if the lien is against the property, and then I sell it to Larry, and with the assumption that he is going to continue farming it, and he doesn't, then who is stuck for the lien?
He would be, whoever the owner of record would be, because in taking over the ownership of that property, the lien would go with the ownership. It would be attached to the documents that you give him for ownership of that. So when he bought the property, he would be aware that that lien was there. As long as he still farms, there's no problem. The lien just continues on. But if he were to sell the property for other than farm use, or as they say now, for sell it for uses incompatible with farm use, then at that moment, the lien would take effect, and he, as the owner of record, would become.
Now, if he didn't, then I would be. If I, knowing that he wasn't going to use it for farming, but for subdivision, then I would be stuck with the to pay it first.
Well, that could be part of the sales agreement as to who would actually pay it.
The lien would be
effective, and it'd be a question of whether you would actually pay it, or he, in assuming ownership, would pay it as part of the sales.
Can I just have one more thing? Under this 10%, if a person doesn't raise anything, they get no money on this property, would he still be eligible for the farming part?
I may ask Bob to correct me, but I assume no. The law says to get the exemption, you must derive 10% of your income from that operation.
But less than 10%, why you wouldn't be eligible?
Right. Well, I assume if you made zero, if the farm were fallow, you got no income off of it, or no other income, then there wouldn't be that.
Yeah, there's an additional provision that you can average for 3 years. So if he was had a crop failure in 1 year, he could probably, no doubt, make it up in another year.
I have one more comment on this, and that is this matter of who is going to pay the deferred taxes. And you suggested that it could be put in the sales agreement. What if the farmer sells it legitimately expecting it to be farmed and the buyer doesn't farm it?
Then the buyer is
eligible to pay the taxes. He would forfeit his.
Lisa?
Well, since the definition of farm use and non-farm use have been read, I think I see now why they've changed the terminology to incompatible uses incompatible with farm use. It broadens it to allow the land to lie fallow or to not be farmed, I think, rather than, unless we're going to, is there a new definition proposed for uses incompatible with farm use or anything of that nature?
I recall vaguely some discussion, that was changed, as I recall, Bob, in the Senate CNRA committee, that if you sold it or if you used it, for example, for grazing and you ran horses on it, you sold the horses and you did derive 10% of your income, you would be eligible, but the question would be, was this farm use? The land could still be farmed at some later date, but actually it had not been farmed that year, but yet 10% of your income had been derived. I don't know if that's a valid example or not.
Well, if it is, I don't have any problem with that part of the new language, personally.
Well, I think it would maybe take care of some of the problems that Mrs. Berry has raised. If you changed it to uses incompatible with farm use, rather than other than farm use and so on.
That's the language, of course, we have in the bill.
What is it?
Yeah, and we have Senate Bill 529 amended, and that's the way they've got it in there.
We haven't objected to that language, although it did open up some definitional areas.
Well, you'd have to change the definitional section of the law, wouldn't you, to take out those other definitions and somehow, I suppose you have to come up with a definition of what's incompatible with farm use.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
If you were to have a large acreage and you sold, or you leased 20 acres out to some guy, pile up wrecked cars, you're not changing the land, you're not bringing anything to it, but it sure as hell incompatible with farm use.
Yeah, I think that nobody's going to argue with that.
Yeah. Now, that's one that springs immediately to mind.
Right. There are some very clear definitions, but then there might be some other ones where it's a little more muddy and
different. As I recall, the one instance was the, you know, to use it just for grazing land to raise horses, you're not actually farming it, it's just grassland that you could replow and make a farm use.
One of the definitions of farm use, though, is animal husbandry.
Oh, is that existing?
Yes, that's considered legitimate farm use.
Horses got to eat, too.
I beg your pardon?
See, horses got to eat, too.
Right. Is it your feeling that the responsibility for determining who pays deferred taxes rests with the state? I would like to have it more clearly defined in the legislation.
It's my understanding that the state's responsible to present time.
I mean, you know, if we're going to put a lien against it and we're going to determine who's using it and who isn't using it for farm use, this is our major administrative problem.
The way I understand, Ms. Berry, the law as it presently reads, that in that situation, payment by the owner shall be made to the state to the extent of its reimbursement for revenue lost. Now, Mr. Dozier can correct me if I'm wrong, but if the person does go into default under the present situation, the state is the entity that comes in and collects. Is that correct? So it's their responsibility to make the determinations and to get the money. Does that answer your question? Or does
yes. But as I say, this is not the way it's been interpreted by the department. It's, to our understanding, we have been attempting to collect the deferred payment and referring it to the state. I don't have a copy of the full legislation. Do you, Bob?
Yes.
Starts right here. We'll go to A, B.
What is your feeling about this, Bob?
I'm discussing the problem with Mr. Bradley. It was his. Seemed to be that our goal of it was that there would be the state's responsibility ultimately, that the borough would have no reason really to put a lien on it. They couldn't very well put a lien on property that they have no tax against the property. Now, the present municipal code is set up for retrieving non-payment of money, non-payment of taxes. Appear that the borough has their money, and they really, in the sense of when they are establishing liens, it's like a tax lien or anything else. They care less where the money comes from. As long as they have the money, there's no reason for a lien. Now, unless it was specified, I think that it was the borough's responsibility to do that. The memo that I sent to Elizabeth Berry on this related to taxes that had been deferred by the borough in prior years. Now, we have no, that could have been a lien on the property in favor of the borough because they did not receive that money.
Right, they were the ones that was the state wasn't making the reimbursement at that point.
No, the state wasn't making the reimbursement.
For those cases, it would most likely be the borough's responsibility to collect those back taxes.
In those cases, we hadn't.
You hadn't?
No.
Had you filed a lien on the property?
No.
You hadn't.
That's a good example of what we're looking at now.
Yeah.
Without the lien, the ability to collect, if you're calling it a deferred tax, is virtually non-existent.
It's really a grant.
Well, my question is, why didn't you make an attempt to collect the back taxes?
The way it was originally set up, there was nothing in the law that suggested that. It was the decision of the local assembly not to. I mean, there was nothing about what happened if you sold it. This law was written by the state in an attempt, I assume, to retain land in farm use. That wasn't part of the original farm use exemption. It simply set up a farm use exemption, not a deferment.
It was seven, it was 2 years back taxes, I believe.
Originally, right.
One other minor point that Barry brought it up, for example, with the deferred taxes that exist in the program for special water and sewer assessments, and she indicated that many people aren't taking advantage of it because of the lien provision. We understand that, and I think the intent of the legislation, both with that program and as we're proposing with this program, is that certainly many people may not want to involve their property in that lien provision, but both programs, if I understand legislative intent correctly, was in an attempt to reduce hardship situations, to where if the person, it does pose a hardship on them, they can apply for the deferred tax, knowing full well that there is lien provision, but there's nothing to indicate that if they're more than happy to pay the tax in either program, that they don't go ahead and pay the tax.
Mr. Hackett?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm totally at loss as to the big problem with the lien provision. If a farmer goes out and buys a tractor and he pays $1,000 down on a $5,000 tractor, he's got a lien of $4,000 against that tractor. Mm-hmm. And if he sells it, the lien goes along with it until the darn thing's paid for. And, you know, I don't understand why farmers should be skittish about lien on their property as long, again, as they're getting a benefit for it.
I think it's because it's always been called an exemption rather than a deferred tax. It's a matter of semantics. If we're encouraging a man to farm, then we're penalizing him with a lien. If we're trying to retain land in farm use, then the lien makes sense.
Mr. Freeman.
Wouldn't you agree that if you provide an exemption for legitimate farmers, and somebody comes along and takes advantage of the state that isn't a legitimate farmer, that there should be some way for the taxpayer of the state to retrieve the money?
We've addressed ourselves in one of the other amendments that we suggested. We do very definitely have people that we suspect the legitimacy of their farming, and we feel that the income in relationship to the rest of their income is not a factor. The third amendment that we suggested addresses ourselves to a different definition of farm use, not based on his percentage of farm use against his regular income, but his production per acre. And this will eliminate all of the borderline cases where people put in a radish patch and a sign on the road and says they're selling radishes and they're in the farm business. As I say, if the state is going to assume the responsibility for collection, then the local government's major problem has been solved right there, as long as we don't have to determine what happens to the land after the farmer sells it.
Well, again, I think it's to me, it's, anyway, it's quite clear that Senate Bill 529 in its original status, or it's the original language drawn up, where the department shall file a lien, and it's the department's responsibility to collect the back taxes.
Right.
I think that
and if this is made clear in the statute, then we have no problems.
Well, I think it's clear.
Right. Would you like to go on to the other two amendments that we've suggested then?
Please do.
We have problems with timely filing with our farmers because it has to be filed before the 1st of February, and this is the time of year when many of our farmers are out of the state. Might be the time of year when they take care of delayed medical care, this type of thing. For senior citizens, We do allow that for just cause and with the approval of the governing body of the municipality that an untimely filing be accepted. And we would like to see something like that included in the existing law for the farmers.
We know that that's in there for the senior citizens. We did it last year.
Right, but it's not in there for the farmers, and it is a similar problem with the farmers.
Right. Does anyone have any discussion on that proposal? Somebody like to move the amendment? Or just do
it? It seems, for the sake of consistency, should do it.
Okay, we'll call that amendment number one. Is there any objection to amendment number one? Okay, we'll adopt that.
Now, our last amendment. This is the one that we've really run into some difficulties with, in that the farmers feel, number one, before the state started paying the deferred tax, we accepted the farmer's certified statement that he had made a certain amount of money and that he had made a portion of that in farm use. First of all, our farmers did not want the local people looking at their income tax forms. They felt that this was privileged information. Many of them feel the same way about the department turning them into the Department of Revenue. Other problems present itself in the way that the law is currently written, in that it requires 10% of the farmer's gross income be from farm use. Now, he might be the best farmer in the valley, he might be the highest producer, but if he happens to have a rich aunt that leaves him a lot of money, he doesn't qualify. And we are suggesting that the criteria for farm exemption or deferred taxes be based on their production per acre. And we are recommending that if a farmer derives $1,000 for anything from a quarter of an acre to 40 acres, that he would qualify, that that's his gross farm income. All he would have to do to convince us that he had received this amount would be to show us receipts, not his income tax. And
how realistic is that, $1,000 for 40 acres? I mean,
according to our farmers, it's very realistic. It's, as a matter of fact, it's quite low, but it does give the man with problems a chance to develop his farm.
That's what I mean. It does seem pretty low. I mean, you can grow hay and on 40 acres, and or just anything you grew that you're using 40 acres to grow with it.
Well, he could have a half acre of strawberries and make $1,000.
Okay, well, what about 40 acres, though?
We're suggesting anything up to 40 acres.
Right. Well,
that we would have a minimum $1,000 farm income, but we feel that the man that goes over 40 acres, then we're suggesting that for each $10 of income over the 40 acres, $10 per acre be considered, so that when you get into a farmer who has 160 acres, we would expect him to earn $1,000 for the first 40 acres and $10 an acre for each additional one. If we are going to encourage farming and we're going to retain a productive farm unit, we expect him to be a fairly successful farmer. We don't want to be underwriting a gentleman farmer who doesn't care how much he makes off of his land.
So if the guy had 160 acres and he made $2,200 off of that, that'd qualify him. And then under normal circumstances, he would have had to make, that would have been 10% of his income, which would have been $22,000.
Right. And we have lots of farmers who work at other jobs, and after work hours and on their weekends, summer vacations, their family, their children develop their farm. And they're making adequate income, but they're not necessarily producing 10% of their income. I mean, 10% of your income is no criteria for your farm production. And we feel that the exemption should be based on farm production, not how much money a man has in his pocket.
Initially, the person with the farm comes to you. Is that right?
Yes.
So if I own a farm and I want to get this tax exemption, I come to you first.
Right.
And then I say, okay, I've got 60 acres here south of town, and I'm growing hay on it. At that point, do your people come out and look at it?
No, we have an application form that's provided to us by the state assessor's office, and we ask them to give us the number of acres they're farming and how they are farming it, and then we go in and determine the productivity of that soil and grant them their farm use exemption based on their productivity.
Which
means that if we have any doubts about the validity of the farm, we would make a personal inspection.
Right. So, for instance, if I had 60 acres and I tried to claim, and actually I was only, you know, 20 acres of it was trees and stump rows, I'd only be able to qualify for 40.
The way this is set up, yes. The way we have set it up in this amendment.
So at that point, then, I don't have to pay the taxes to you, or I have to pay the... I just have to pay a lower tax rate, isn't that right?
Right. You pay the amount of the farm use
right.
value.
So the
and
land
the
is,
state pays the difference between the farm use value and the market value.
The property is assessed differently, right? What is it, $150 an acre?
It's based on the productivity of the farm.
What's the maximum you can assess my property at if I'm farming 40 acres?
$200 an acre.
$200 an acre.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Now, just say that just the land that is in farmland, if I have 40 acres of land, or say 80 acres of land, and I'm just farming 5 acres of that, the rest of it is, I could be using hold it for speculation or anything. That would still qualify me on the entire 80 acres.
That's the way it is now.
But under this would be this... Would this be just on the 5 acres I'm farming?
It would be the productivity on the amount of acres that you're farming. Now, there are some acreage that's required for farming. For an example, windrows that would be included. But you wouldn't get an exemption on 160 acres because you were farming 5 of them.
Unless you were making, unless it was all cleared and tillable and you made $2,200.
Right. Of course, if you're capable of making $2,200 off of a half an acre of production, you're a pretty good farmer.
But I mean, this would qualify you for all the rest of it. Then that's what I'm getting at. That would qualify you for all the rest of the land would be under farm taxation.
No, only that's actually farmed is what was our intent.
Well, that's what I was trying to clear that one.
It's not quite clear to me either. However,
at the moment, we take a whole farm. Decut all the acreage in the farm, determine its productivity, and we give him farm exemption on everything.
Oh, including his, not his, how about his residence?
Our residence is considered part of the farm unit.
Oh, so the whole farm gets the break. So it, more than likely, if a person had 160 acres, the whole, he'd pay the maximum, or his assessment would be... $32,000, I guess, huh? Mr. Dozier?
Mr. Chairman, one of the larger landowners in the area has approximately 900 acres scattered 160, 20, 40, 60, scattered all over the valley, and she is, in the present time, getting a credit on all of their property. But she is farming a portion of each of those parcels. However, under the wording of the bill, it says a farm unit, and that is interpreted rather loosely as to mean the whole property. But that's the way it's been operated.
I think that's proper, Mr. Chairman. If you got a farm, if you've got two acreages, you may farm one section of it 1 year and let the other lie fallow for a year. You can't very well say you're going to jerk that out of the all or none proposition if you're trying to keep the land in agricultural use.
Right.
A portion of that land that we were just discussing was its swamp and many portions of that is not farming land. It's just laying fallow in its original undeveloped shape.
not even used for grazing in many cases or in any use, but we have been allowing it. It's a little different than in the Midwest where you have they follow and come back.
Now that would make a difference.
But our concern is that we feel that these exemptions should be based on the production from it rather than comparing the amount of money he makes from his farm from his overall income. I see no relationship between the farmer's overall income from other sources and his ability to produce on a certain piece of land. If he's farming it, he's producing it, then I see no reason why he shouldn't be allowed the deferment.
Well, you make a good case, and you brought up a lot of points that probably many of us weren't too familiar with. And I think that we're probably not going to act on the bill right away here. We're out of time. So I think that your testimony has been real complete, though, and thank you very much for coming. We're adjourned.